Good morning. Welcome to the FTS Bet Slip on Tuesday, the 24th of May. I hope you're all well. Not as per usual, because it's not usual, because I don't do it every podcast, but at the end of this brief podcast, there is the next episode of the mindset stuff, so a bit more sort of the final conclusion of system development. So do stay on. If there's a little pause at the end, do stay on and listen to that, because I record that separately now and sort of add it on to the end, paste it onto the end of this podcast. So what has happened? Well, the old let's do the golf first. Really disappointed in Fitzpatrick, I'm not gonna lie. I got out for small green. There were a few opportunities. He just played so poorly. He just was awful on Sunday, as were most of them, to be fair. I always felt Pereira was going to come back. He didn't look comfortable. Zalatoris played okay, really good up and down off the cart path when he hit it in the bushes on the par three. But of all of them, Fitzpatrick for me was just awful. I know you've got young players who've never won their first major, but they were just poor, and Thomas hung about, didn't he? That's all he did, hung about, and I was under no doubt at all that when they got to the playoff, there was only going to be one winner. But just looking at how Fitzpatrick plays his golf, and I know one of the guys put in the group don't like the way he plays. He was really poor Sunday. He's normally, you know, he is a good, solid young player, and one I wouldn't have had down for the mistakes he was made. Just looked to be hitting the wrong clubs all the time. I don't know what him and his caddy were up to, but just he just looked to be, you know, they tell you what he's hitting on the tee, and I'm stood there going, he's got no chance of getting there with that. There was one par three, I think he hit 8-iron. I thought he got no chance. The one he hit in the water, you know, trying to jump on a 5-iron. And once you, you know, again, if you play the game, start trying to force an extra 5 yards, you just put yourself in trouble. You know, that one he hit it in the water, it's just an easy 4-iron for him all day long. But there we go. So yeah, it was what could have been, and looked at the golf rankings yesterday, thought it quite unique. I think it's unique. There'll be somebody who corrects me, but the top five in the world golf rankings now are the four major winners, current major holders, and the Players' Champ, which is sort of called the fifth major. You've got Scheffler, Masters champion, as number one. Rahm, current US Open, you know, maybe only for another month, but as number two. Smith, the Players' Champ, as three. Morikawa, as the Open champion at four. And Thomas, the new PGA champion at five. Just thought that was a bit unique. But we go again. Now I'm travelling up north. I've had my jabs. I've had my vaccines. I don't know where that monkeypox is. It's flipping a rife up there. I've had my jabs to cross Watford border, get through the old Watford gap. Yeah, so I don't know when I'm going to do the golf podcast, but I will do one, I promise you. Even I might even record it whilst driving. Yeah, that'll be good, won't it? I might even be talking and driving, but we'll see. I've got lots to do before taking the dog with me. It's like packing up for the kids, taking the dog up north. So I've just got loads to do today to do that. I'm really fortunate there's no football today. But I will get the golf out this week, and it'll, you know, we're into the routine now. It'll be do a quick preview, and then I'll get the bits out for Friday if we've got any bets. And now the football's finished, you know, I'm not going to tell people, because I think it's one of the key elements learning how to trade, exactly what to do, because I don't like doing that. It's your money, you do what you want to do, but I will give guidance in the Telegram group where I can. Again, people just want, oh, tell me what to do, tell me, if you don't tell me what to do, I can't do it. All a little bit pathetic, but looking forward to going up north, looking forward to seeing some of you on Saturday. Have a good chat with Andy while I'm up there about the racing setup. So, yeah, it'd just be nice, you know, with Sam away, been rattling around these four walls. On the top most of the time, go a bit stir-crazy talking to yourself or talking to a spaniel all day long. Baby was born on Friday. All went well. Olivia, not Olivia, just Livia. Olivia minus the O. Sam hates it. Livia! But all just under £6, all doing well. Some lovely pictures this morning of Ari holding his baby sister. I understand already that the dynamic in the apartment, the Maltese apartment, is strained, I shall say. Which, then I do think the solitude of here on my own is quite good. And some more bad news. A mate of mine got skin cancer and apparently he's in a really bad way. So I'm going to, when I get back from up north, I'm going to try and, his wife's going away, so I'm going to try and move him in here and look after him. So that might hinder me a little bit. But she texts me in a bit of desperation yesterday, just saying he's really not good. Flipping bastard bad news. I'm not going to give his name. Met an FTS member who got married a couple of years. His dad had a stroke on the wedding day. I mean, I just don't know what's going on at the minute. Actually, on the wedding day, his dad had a stroke. Yeah, just awful. But we will get some good news. Well, we did get some good news, didn't we? We got some good news if Carlsberg did Sundays on the football. I was very nervous because it's Tottenham, but I'd arranged a long time ago to actually be out on that Saturday afternoon. Didn't want to get into all the hype of it, and I'll be honest, I didn't think Spurs would be in with a prayer of getting top four, so I'd booked this up a long time ago. And a lovely afternoon, went to one of my favourite eateries just outside King's Cross with some FTS members and their children, which was entertaining. Went to the ice cream parlour, went to the bakery, got a cake, and was moonwalking around King's Cross as the goals went in. But it's a lovely afternoon. Thank you for those who came. A couple pathetic ones bottled out. We had quite a big do. It's one of them things. I ended up making about 15 different bookings because as the picture of the football started to emerge, they didn't have anything about them. So we had a Liverpool fan who didn't turn up because obviously he. City were going to win the league. We had a West Ham fan who, on the morning, oh, I'm not coming, I've got a sniffly nose. Obviously, he didn't want to see Spurs get Champions League football after they've had their best season ever, haven't they? I mean, they have had their best season ever. The old Hoovers will be out doing a little dance for their, whatever it is, 7th, 8th place and got to a semi-final. Pathetic. But those of us who went had a lovely day. And it was just beautiful, wasn't it? Wasn't it beautiful? Obviously, Spurs calmed the nerves with 5 goals. The fact that Gooners then cuffed Everton was safe, but the fact that Gooners cuffed them, you know, they're looking now thinking what could have been if they'd won at Newcastle. You know, it's a game I was quite happy to see them win. Oh, in Arteta we trust and all that. I look at the league, I don't know how we did it. We were 4 points behind with 3 games to go. And then you've got Liverpool, wasn't it, mate? I'm not gonna lie. I was sweating a little bit when it went 1-0 Villa. I thought that's all right. It's no problem. You know they'll turn that round. And then when I saw it was 2-0 Villa, and there was only 25 minutes to go. I was a bit panicky. I thought, you know, Liverpool are going to get a winner. You just know it's going to happen. And I actually didn't realise. I thought a draw was enough for City, and I called the old Tate. I thought, oh shit, they do need to win. Well, that's that done. And you just know Liverpool. And I thought, oh, we'll know what'll happen. Liverpool will get it in the 90th minute. But, you know, they think I've got a pop on the old Gerrard Ball fans. I haven't. I just think you need to wind your necks in a little bit. That's all. Let things play out. See what happens. Every signing is all of a sudden the best player in the world. Fantastic signing. Brilliant. Da, da, da. Just wait and see. I thought Ndombele was going to be a fantastic signing for Spurs. He's garbage. Just wait and see what happens. And how do you let 3 goals in 6 minutes? You're able-bodied, grown sportsmen. That's what they are. Don't talk about the golfing class in teams. They're able-bodied sports people. How do you concede 3 goals in 6 minutes when you've got to get it out of the net and kick off? With all the bedlam going on in the crowd, I just don't get how you do it. I stand by, and it's not all Villa fans. I've got one Villa FTS fan. He hasn't put it publicly, but he said to me, and I'm not going to name him, lovely guy, he said to me, I don't think Gerrard is the man for us. And there we go. So we've had a little bit of fun, haven't we? I did laugh. I just clicked the end button then. I did laugh last week. I did laugh last week that the Richarlison thing, I hooked one, didn't I? I hooked one in old James W. I hooked him in. I've not seen the Richarlison flare incident. I just heard about it, and I was doing a Zoom the night before the Friday podcast, which I think must have been the night Everton got safe. And I said, oh, they've got themselves safe. And just with the person I was having Zoom, I was having a laugh, saying, oh, Richarlison scored the goal. And they said to me, oh, yeah, he should have been banned from that flare. So I'm going to use that tomorrow in the podcast just to throw the old hook out. And we got one. We got one. He was in. Richarlison, you're all wrong. Da, 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 da. I love it. I do it to be mischievous. I've got, again, Sam's not here. I've got to entertain myself. I stand by the fact he's one of the worst performances I've seen when he came to Tottenham. And the guy was saying that he could go into reasons why he's good. And he may well go for big money. That doesn't mean it's right. I go back in Ndombele, 64 million. Everton played 50 million for Sigurdsson, by the way, which was equally fucking ridiculous. Okay player, but he's not a 50 million pound player when they bought him. He's not for me. Simple as that. From what I've seen, he's not for me. He rolls around the floor. I don't doubt that he can score goals, but if he was brilliant, Everton wouldn't have been finding themselves down there. It's not just, you know, it's if you've got brilliant players in your team, you know, Spurs haven't been rolling around the floor because Harry Kane's brilliant in times when we've been terrible. But there we go. I'm not getting into it. I just thought I'd throw the old hook out, and we did. And you get them. You get the Villa fans with the little one in the email yesterday. I can't help myself. Fortunately, I hope you all understand, I do just do it for a little bit of and it's nothing personal. It's just a little bit of football banter. And, of course, the old Gooners, I mean, they are in turmoil, aren't they? They're going to have them Thursday nights. All my Zoom sessions next week, next year, Thursday nights, because Tuesdays and Wednesdays I'll be busy. I'm going to be doing a little bit of touring Europe myself. I'm going to take Scotty Blaber to a European game, try and see what the draw is, see where we end up, Dortmund, Milan. While you lot, you'll be in Azerbaijan, won't you? Beautiful. It's beautiful. I don't know how you threw it away. In Arteta, we trust. What are they doing giving him a new contract in May? Why not wait till the end of the season, see where you're at, and do it from that? I thought it was key, really key to Tottenham to get the top four. I don't think top four is a trophy. You know, yes, it's nice to play Champions League football. Tottenham aren't going to win the Champions League. It's, I want to keep Conte. I love the man. I think he's fantastic. Best manager for me since we had Birkinshaw. I just love everything about him. I love the way he acts. Love the running, the passion. And I want to see him at the club for a little bit longer. I accept he's not going to be there forevermore. But I think without Champions League, he'd have probably been gone. So it just means we'll certainly have another season and the chance to actually get rid of some of the shit players and bring in something decent and watch some good football. We're not going to, you know, I say in my piece, City won 4 leagues out of 5. We're not going to challenge the likes of that. Liverpool aren't going to challenge the likes of that forevermore. The game is completely and utterly gone, you know, and City fans can sit there and kid themselves that it's right, it isn't right. I accept you want to revel in winning, but what is happening in football with these clubs is fundamentally wrong. When you've got companies, you're putting your figures and saying you've got deals worth 400 million with companies who don't even turn over 400 million. You're sponsoring your stadium for silly money, all just to be able to buy your way to success. Yeah, you can say it's bitter. That's the facts. It's not right. The game is shafted. You look at Burnley in trouble, got to pay back 65 million in loans. I just think it's a real shame the way the game has gone. But I understand City fans jumping up and down winning. And I was one who enjoyed seeing you win, I'm not going to lie. I don't hide it. I've not hidden my sort of despising of Liverpool ever since I've been doing these podcasts. Somebody put in the group, surely we want Liverpool to win over City and all the money. No, I accept that City are going to win, you know, probably Bayern Munich style, 8, 9, 10 of the next Premier Leagues. But I would rather be tunnelling my way out of an ISIS concentration camp in a pair of Y fronts with using my bare hands than see Liverpool win a game of football. So there you go. And that's just me. I'll stand by it. I don't agree what's happening with the game. PSG, you know, City, I imagine Newcastle and Exeter. The fans can justify, they're going to do that. It's your club, that's what you're going to do. And you look yourself in the mirror and say, it's right, that's, you know, that's your choices. The game is absolutely shafted. I just think it's ridiculous the way it goes about. But it is what it is, and we live and bet around it. So there we go. But it was a beautiful little Sunday. It's the fact they had that hope, them Liverpool fans. They would have had that at 0-2, wouldn't they? They'd have all been sitting there willing themselves to score against Wolves. They're not getting that back. They're not going to get back from that. And it's that's what made it even sweeter, that little hope that they were sat there with. You could see them all getting excited. And then 3 goals in 6 minutes. Oh, Gerrard does it again. Gerrard somehow manages to cost Liverpool a title when he's nothing to do with the club. It's brilliant. Absolutely beautiful. I know, I'm sick in the head. I get it. Yeah. Little things please me. Can't help it. I think that's it. I've got no admin. My next pod will be from up north. Looking forward, as I say, to seeing a few faces up there. I'm looking forward to it. And I'm very much into sort of get this out of the way. I'm going to have a quiet sort of couple of weeks. But really into admin and getting set up for next season. And I'll be feeding bits out as we do that over the coming weeks. Stay on now for the Mindset Pod. And I'll be back with you from the depths of the north later this week. I might even have a guest pod on Friday or Saturday. So watch this space. Hello and welcome to another episode on the Mindset Pods. The last time I touched on further system development, mentioned winning, losing runs, expecting the unexpected and making yourself bomb-proof. All of that comes into system development, which... the staking side I will move on to in later episodes in more depth as we actually get into how to better system and actual mechanics of trading, which is, you know, a little bit further down the road. We've obviously got to have something to bet first, so system development is a key area to start. And I want to stay on this process now with system development. For this episode, talk a little bit about overfitting back testing, as that always comes up when we study past data. And it's in any field. It's, you know, finance, betting, crypto. Everything we do in life generally is trying to predict what will happen on what's happened in the past. So, for example, having just come through COVID, the data that agencies have gathered through COVID and how that data was used will be used to plan for not if, but when that type of situation happens again, because it will happen again. It cannot be prevented. You know, in amongst all the conspiracy theories of whether it was manufactured or natural occurring or whatever, it will happen again, maybe 20 years time, maybe 100 years time. And the data we collect now will be used and is being used to predict what will be needed and how to handle that at the time. And obviously you hope that when it does happen again, it's handled better than it was this time, because they've used that data to predict things forward. So it's whatever we're in, it's not just unique to betting. And when we're optimizing a betting system, all we're actually looking at, we should be looking at, is how to make the most effective use of it. And most people who I kind of speak to or work with, and when you start on that road, they start by trying to make it as simple as possible for them to operate. So they don't, no work involved, don't want to have to do anything. And alongside that, they make the biggest profit they can find. And that nearly always ends up, you know, as a very unrealistic result and outcome that has no chance going forward. You know, there's, as I say, there's many elements to this. Hard work is the first one on the list. If it then doesn't pan out going forward, obviously that better quits. It's everybody else's fault, not the fact that they haven't worked or done things properly. And then they'll quit that method, and in effect, you know, they might have a couple of weeks break or whatever it may be, but they'll come back to it, repeat that process for another method, and it just becomes an ever decreasing circle. What we're actually looking at is how can we make the most effective use of it, and how can we focus only on its predictive value forward. That's all that actually matters. Can I take that forward and make money? So in the process of developing our system, and in 2021 I did a sort of summer school looking a bit more at this, we're in essence looking to answer a series of sub-questions, if you like, all under the sort of domain of one main question: what will enable me to extract profit from the market on an ongoing basis? And I'm going to start by saying now there are many, many ways to do it, despite what you're told or what people think. So in football, as an example, which I trade, the first question may well be, how do we want to do it? Is it match odds? Is it first half goals? Is it both teams to score? Is it overs, unders? Is it second half goals? And I think what you tend to find with most football punters is they want to try and do a bit of everything, rather than, again, just focusing on one area. But once you've answered that question in one area, then the progression of that becomes pretty obvious and organic then, because if we want goals, then the 1x2 data becomes slightly less relevant and goals data becomes more relevant. The prices that we want to bet at become relevant. That becomes an attitude to risk. Where do you want to get involved? Do you want to bet short prices? Do you want to take on big prices? Do you want to lay at big prices? Do you want to back, you know, even money-ish in and around there? So that becomes relevant. Predicting goals and not who wins becomes relevant. So the actual output that we're trying to generate isn't who wins matches, is are there going to be goals in that matches? And the walk forward testing mentioned last time helps us decide from there what is relevant and irrelevant, and show us what effect things will have on our ability to make money forward. So it just kind of becomes a sort of load of questions that, you know, I don't know, and I've always said that, I don't know what leads people to listen to this podcast or what leads people to search for gambling online. It's not the road I went down. You know, do people get up in the morning fed up with their job and look, how can I make money gambling? I've no idea. I haven't looked up that as a Google search time to see how many times it's been searched. Perhaps I should. But once you sort of go down that road, right, how do I make money gambling? Right, I want to make money football trading. How am I going to make money football trading? What market are you going to operate in has got to be the starting point. What is it that you want to do, looking to do, might be good at? Where are your particular skills? And once you've got that market identified, then it's a series of questions off that that you are now just going to go through and answer. And I'd guess that you'd start with attitude to risk being the first one. So then you've determined what you're actually looking to try to do. So I want to play in the goals markets, but I don't want to be long losing runs. I don't want to take on big price. I want to operate around even money. Right, how do we build that in? And then obviously you could do the most obvious one being over 2.5, because most of the markets are around about even money. You know, that's where it all prices off from there. Then you might say, I'm going to do first half goals, but I'm going to do them 20 minutes into the match. Or I'm going to do second half goals, but I'm going to do them 70 minutes into the match, because we then are getting to prices nearer even money, sort of 75, 80 minutes. We're getting that even money and better prices. So, you know, again, that comes down understanding. But so there's lots of facets to it, but it's got to start with that first question. But taking it on from that back to overfitting, your system, overfitting your system will be one of the most likely points of failure. In its basic term, it is applying too many variables. And as I guess the phrase would be, you're manipulating the data as opposed to using data. And that would be the distinction I'd make, that people manipulate data to get set on a small irrational sample of winning results, as opposed to using the data to get a fair representation of what that data can show. I personally like broad brush approaches. Football as a sport, you know, not, these are sort of the red lines that I stand on and the bones of contention I have with people. Football as a sport is fairly predictable. And as such, I don't believe it's overly difficult to make money from it. I think you've got to work hard, but got to work hard at anything that provides you with a decent income. But irrespective of what we are told, I believe that. I believe football is predictable, and I have a sort of favourite saying is that it's the people who don't work properly, not the markets. As I write this now in summer 2022 or end of spring 22, whatever we want to call it, the season end. PSG have just won their 8th league title in 10 years. City have just won their 4th in 5th years. Bayern have won 10 Bundesligas on the trot. Celtic have made it 37 years since anyone other than Rangers or themselves have won the Scottish title. Only 4 teams have won La Liga in the 21st century. And 18 times that's been Barca or Real Madrid. And it's the same at the bottom end of the table. Watford and Norwich come up, Watford and Norwich go down, Fulham go down, Fulham come up. It's all a bit predictable. 23% of games ended in a draw in the EPL in 21-22. It was around 22%, I believe, in 2021 and around 24% in 19-20. Remember, that's a COVID period. Remember when COVID was going to change football for life? You've got like a 2-3% swing in draws, 23-22-24. Forever, you know, we're going to see this drastic. You're just not going to see 50% draws 1 year and 30% the next. You might see it over a 2-week period, but over as things play out, you just will not see it. It does not happen ever. And unfortunately, people don't understand that and they don't stay in long enough, or they've built their method poorly or staked badly, or they're just plain not cut out of it and cannot take advantage of the predictability of it. I think the simplicity of the predictability of football is difficult for people to comprehend, to be honest. So they try and make it all far too complicated. And they rather than embrace what is the obvious, what is really obvious in the long term, and build it into your methods. You know, they focus on the short. Just find people focus too much on things that are completely irrelevant, not to do with them. You know, again, worrying what others doing. Oh, this trader's doing that. What do you think? It's got nothing to do with you. So why don't you just focus on what you're doing? I really find that mindset. Particularly in gambling, and whether I say particularly in gambling, it's because obviously it's the field I'm in. Perhaps it does happen in other walks of life, and I'm just not aware of it. But you know, I've lived 51 years, and I've just never really seen a phenomenon like it, where people are too concerned with what others are doing, rather than in what is an individual activity. In fact, doing what they should be doing or what they want to do for themselves. I find it absolutely staggering. But getting back, people do try and make it all too complicated. And of course, things go wrong. You know, Leicester winning the title in 2016. So I say football's predictable, but it's one time. And it still remains to me one of the biggest shocks in sport. Man United falling off a cliff, you know, by their standards, you know, by Southampton standards, they haven't. But Man United, by their standards, have fallen off a cliff. You know, with the highest wage bill in all the sports, I believe. I think they've got the highest wage bill in world sport. And fallen off a cliff. It wasn't predictable. I think when Sir Alex Ferguson packed up, we all expected a little bit of, you know, the train would derail a little bit. But what are we now? 7-8 years past that? 3-5 managers in. But over time, all those things get priced in. I have no doubt personally that Man United will come back, but I do not know how long that will take. You know, when I was a kid, Liverpool were the dominant team. But the facts remain that since then, you know, and it isn't a dig at Liverpool, it's the facts that they've won one title in 30 years. As a result of that, for years, they were inefficiently priced. They were one of my most profitable teams. Will it take United 25 years? I've no idea. But whilst they are in turmoil, if you like, they are exploitable in the market because everybody has an opinion, and that the idea of Man United is a team that just wins. So they are being, in my opinion, priced too short. Eventually, two things will happen. They will return to the top. The prices will get shorter, or they will continue as they are, and the prices will drift out. But it never happens immediately because people always think, surely they're going to get it right. It's a public perception. And while we're on that, I'll just diverge a little bit into efficient markets. Another reason that gamblers love to quote for failing is efficient markets, you know, and the efficient market hypothesis, if you like, is a reason for failure. We cannot beat these efficient markets. What is the market efficient at? Somebody give me an answer. What is the market efficient at? In essence, the hypothesis is all the information is freely available, and as such, it's quickly assimilated and the market forms the correct price. If I go to the football fixtures just gone, the market decided on Friday morning at 8 o'clock, Leicester were 1.92, home to Southampton, at 1.92 at 8 a.m. on the 20th of May, 2022. At 3 p.m. on the 22nd of May, the market decided they were 1.8. Perhaps they listened to my podcast, freely available information that gets assimilated. But what other information changed between those two time slots? It's a significant drop in price. I still think the 1.8 was wrong, personally. I said on my podcast on the Friday that I thought Leicester were massively overpriced. Tremendous value to win the game. They did indeed win the game comfortably. But the information didn't really change between those two time slots. Each market is independent. Each market has hundreds, thousands, maybe some of them tens of thousands of users. And my view's always been, if more than one person is using that market, then there's more than one opinion in that market. People use markets at different times for different styles of trading. You know, collectively, yes, when we take all the markets, all the home win markets collectively and put them together, we cannot beat them all. We know that. That's, you know, that common sense to me. But this nonsense that every single market at every single time slot is perfectly efficient, in my opinion, that's what it is. It's frankly nonsense. It is why we have backers and layers. It's why exchanges exist. Scalpers want a few ticks. I may want to get in and then protect my money on a relevant event. Gold goes in, remove my liability. Others want to bet and leave. Arbors want to cover their other positions. If a market makes a significant rick, that are profited, that they're soon discoverable. 1.92 Leicester for me was a significant rick. The reason it shortened was because people identified it was a significant rick and it shortened up, and 1.8 was still a rick, in my opinion. But it is just a load of flowing movement, and in football matches case over, usually over, you know, a number of days. The market goes up 3-4 days before the event. And determining your decisions on the fact that you cannot beat it, or the fact that you may have got one or even a good few wrong, to go from that to saying you cannot exploit them for gain, says more about you than it ever will about market efficiency, in my view. It's a cop-out phrase for those who cannot win, plain and simple, who want to look at things in the whole. And that's it. You know, it's an area that you could have many an argument with. I don't tend to do that. I don't tend to divulge people like that, because you're not going to win. If that's what people have made their mind up, I'm not going to convince them. They'll find examples where they think they're right, and I'll find examples where I think they're wrong. And then when I do that, they go, well, you got lucky. Well, I didn't get lucky. In my opinion, I didn't get lucky. I didn't get lucky that Leicester beat Southampton. My exact words were, fill your boots. It was absolutely standout. Of course I get some wrong, but I get more right than I get wrong. And that basically is what it is. And it could be on over 3.5 goals. It could be on a first half goal. You just nudge along. So, you know, it's a cop-out. For me, that's, you know, if you're sitting there going, I can't beat it, you are probably best just packing up and going and doing something else. So getting back to the sort of thing for me, having the price data on all my outputs, whatever the sport, that's the key. That's the first thing that I wanted. I want the prices. Whatever the sport I would do, I want the prices. Because when we go back to market system optimization, I want the current market conditions. I want to know what's happening. I want to know, and I'm a bit OCD with it. I want to know what average prices are. Are prices moving? Is there significant changes in what's happening in the market? I want a price on a time. So if I want a price on 25 minutes, I want it on 25 minutes. I don't want it on 28 minutes because somebody's built a bot and it cannot get the exact match time. So that'll do, and it means that they don't have to watch it. The price data for me is key. For most people, it's an inconvenience. You know, it's too much like hard work. Well, I can't go to the pub if I've got to get the prices on 25 minutes or 70 minutes. Well, decide what you want to do. Go to the pub and leave the rest out of it. Anyway, getting back to overfitting data manipulation. If you followed the sort of last two episodes, we talked those seven steps. And it shouldn't, if you follow those through, shouldn't really be an issue. But it is a subject that we should cover because building systems is a skill in itself. And it will probably take a bit of time to develop your skills to build systems. But overfitting is fairly easy to spot or analyze. If you walk forward testing, live betting, your results differ significantly from what would be reasonably expected, and we can't identify a significant change in again, let's use football, in football performance, for example, if we can't identify that, there's a fair chance we might have overfitted what we're doing. So if we go back to that episode where I talked about my under 1.5, if goals stay at 2.71 per game, market prices stay within the same parameters, and just as a guide, over 2.5 goals, to back over 2.5 goals in the Premier League in the 17-18 season was 1.99 on average, and 1.96 in 2021-22, so a drop. I think it was about 1.94 in between, so we got 1.99 down to 1.94 up to 1.96. So it's not a significant huge change. We're not backing at 1.99 one season and then 1.86 the next. That I would say is a significant market change. And if goals are staying at 2.71 and not dropping down to 2.5 or not going up to, you know, 4.1, there's not a significant change in performance. But what you'll find with football, and in that model, that example I gave in the last episode, is goal production did fall down. And that is one of the big areas that things happen. Goal production will fall down to 2.5 for, whether we want to call it months, and again, I don't like working in times, for let's say a period of 60 days, the goal production fell down to 2.5 for that period. So that means goals were harder to come by. There were less goals in games, which obviously if you're trading goals makes the whole thing a little bit harder. If we're saying, and it has done, the goal average has now stayed continual around about 2.7 for certainly the last 7-8 years across football. So if we are saying that, then obviously we're having these periods of 2.5. There'll be periods where there's 2.9, 3. Because to get to that 2.7 average, we've got to have that. If we're going to have low periods, we've got to have high ones to create the average. So they're going to be your clover periods. So the 2.5, you might find things hard going. I can identify it. Well, goals were down. If it stayed at 2.5 forevermore, that's when I would have to do something. But it's impossible that that's going to happen. We have to have highs and lows. And we have highs and lows in our results, highs and lows what's going on in football. And we can monitor all these different numbers at different stages as part of our analysis, rather than overfitting and getting things to systems to fit that. So all of a sudden stopping something and removing a filter because goal production's down to 2.5 based on a small sample data is the wrong way to go. So if there's no changes in the performance data, we can look at other reasons. And one of the things I come across when I'm helping people go through their systems, which is something I've seemed to, you know, since COVID, I didn't even know of Zoom before COVID, and I'm not sure, I'm glad I found it, I'll be honest, but it, when you sit and talk to people about their systems, it's people researching on one price and betting on completely another. So they'll have a database for market prices. Ones we use tend to be 5 minutes before kickoff mostly, and they've built their data based on something else, and then by the time they bet at 5 minutes, those prices are significantly different. Now over tens, hundreds, thousands of bets, that can make a significant difference. So if, for example, you've built a system based on Friday prices at 8 o'clock laying up to six, but you're going to bet at 5 minutes before because there's more money in the market and you can get matched easier, but it means you're taking a bigger price because the price has shifted from 8 o'clock on Friday to look at that. If I back Leicester at 1.92 Friday and I leave it, but I back them at 1.8 just before kickoff, obviously there's a significant difference. If I keep doing that, I'm losing money on my winners significantly. If you're laying at a bigger price, you're losing more money on the ones that get beat for you. So you can't consume too much of that, and you need to check it. So another thing that we check is the average prices and what we're betting at. And obviously, if you're betting further away from your data set that you've built something on, it will probably mean that at some stage you're going to end up in trouble and you need to look at it. And it's not necessarily the method in that case. It's just purely how you're betting it. So you need to have a look at that. But overfitting generally will be irrational filters. You know, I've heard all sorts, not betting on a certain day of the week. As you've identified, Saturdays were bad for a couple of months, or not betting a league because it was bad for a couple of months, removing months of the year on block as they lost last year. I kind of look at it as a sort of bit of artistry. People are trying to paint a beautiful picture of next to no losses, and you know, I know people who are close to me who do this, and I've actually sort of given up and think, well, I'll just let them get on with it. Create this beautiful picture of next to no losses rather than embrace the ups and downs and look at a long-term upward trend. You can solve it all with a fairly simple checklist. Has your system got too many rules and conditions to allow for no natural flow of events? You know, if we just accept that there's a natural flow to how things go, and then we bet around that, you're going to be in a much better position. Is your data sample too small, and is it inaccurate? And I'm not going to know. People ask me. We've just undergone on FTS a massive project, and it has been a massive project. And I say we, it wasn't me, so I'm kind of taking credit for something I didn't do, but. The man behind the data, if you like, has gone a massive project correcting and making sure our data was 100%. And we're pretty confident we got there. Certainly 99.9% of our data is correct. Some of the gear that you guys use, and I've, you know, somebody says to me, if you know, look at that, I'll have a look at it. It's just terrible. It's just terrible. And it's simple things. It's like, let's say there's a goal in the 92nd minute and the score goes 3-1 and Betfair may close the market and it's closed to 3-1 and then VAR gets chalked off, but you've grabbed that 3-1 and you'll have wrong results in the database. You'll have wrong goal times in the database, too many goals. And there's loads of it, and there's lots of things out there, and I'm not going to name them because it's not my job to name them. It's for them to check their data and for users who are using that data to be confident and check that they're using data. I'm telling you, there's a load wrong, and it's poor, but it's just sloppy. It's, you know, again, it comes down to all, let's just automate and grab all this and actually not go through and say, hang on a minute, that's wrong. And particularly in the days of VAR, we are seeing it with goals chalked off, particularly late goals at the end of either half. You're getting incorrect half-time scores, incorrect results at the end of matches, incorrect goal numbers, and there's lots of it. So data sample too small, inaccurate data. Obviously, if we build something on accurate data, we've got no chance of it working going forward. Incomplete analysis of testing. So when we're testing and optimising things, we need to correlate that to what we were expecting when we were building the system in the first place. A lack of understanding of overall market and event data. So I'm talking here about 1x2 percentages. Goal, you know, understanding prices, average prices, understanding average number of goals, all those sort of things that you should build into, just keeping it up to date, checking it as an ongoing basis. I always have 5-10 year means for everything that I can relate to, and I can see if things move off that mean, and I can instantly then, if I'm having a bad run of results, I can go through a little checklist of going, betting at the same prices, bet in the same leagues. Prices haven't moved, goals down, whatever it may be. So sort of the lack of understanding of overall market and event data, and then the lack of analysis of that. I'm having a terrible time in France. Okay, why? What are you doing? Well, I'm back in the draws. Okay, first obvious question is, how are the draws doing in France? Oh, well, they were 30% last year. What are they? Well, so far this season, only 10%. Well, there you go. There's your answer. So now you've got a decision to make. Do you honestly believe they're going to stay at 10% and go back to COVID? Everybody telling me football was finished and this, that and the other. The championship, I think it was in particular. Not many goals. It all got pretty much back to where it was. There was differences, but there wasn't this sort of apocalyptic view that people were going to make, and there isn't when you look at things over a long period of time. And in doing that, there are times when you experience some pain, because obviously there's going to be periods when Man United aren't great and Man United keep coming up as a bet. But you can make educated decisions then. You know, that's when you can use your brain a little bit. But it's just a matter of, this is not these apocalyptic changes in football that people think. It is all fairly predictable. And what you basically need is to put in steps to build your system and then steps to analyse that. And I'm not talking week in, week out, but regularly. And certainly if things go wrong, rather than just throwing it in the bin and going, well, that's that done with, let's try and identify why it's go wrong. Is it a lack of the numbers? Is it things are happening in the market? Or is it the fact that actually what I built this on doesn't stand up to scrutiny? And that's why we test it forward. So, you know, with using these three episodes together, you should have a better grasp, hopefully, of building and developing a system using the seven steps covered in this one and the previous two. And you should be able to start to identify yourselves if things go wrong and have you overfit things, and put checks, you know, checks and measures in place, processes to measure your performance against what's happening, and not make irrational decisions. A lot of it will come down to what sort of better you are. So I am purely numbers driven. I like numbers because I can't really do anything about them. They come out and that gives me a guide. I'm not opinion driven, as in I don't sit there and go, I think there'll be a goal here, or I think they will win that. I might say it to myself, I might say it in the pub, I might say it getting on a train, going up to the football, talking to people, but I would never base my bets. I think if you're standing there going, I'm really good at football and this, that and the other, I think you've really got to have a fantastic track record to back that up. And I've yet to meet anyone who has got one and said, look at this, mate, I won 100 grand on my opinion. Those sort of people tend to talk about when they're winning. They don't talk about when they're losing, and when they're losing, it's not their opinion. All of a sudden, something else has happened. I like to have numbers in place and then checks and measures against those numbers that can see what's going wrong. But I'm quite broad brush in how I go about my approach to it. So I don't have any views. I just look at numbers and go, yep. And they're quite, I don't have masses of filters. I literally have, you know, 2-3 and that's it. I will look at, obviously football leagues are different, so I will look at different leagues and treat them differently. And I can take a contrarian view to some people. You know, I don't mind betting in French League 2 or things like that where there's less goals because I'm getting the prices for it. But I think you've got, you know, going back to it, putting it all in summary, you've got the seven steps that we've gone through, done a little bit on market efficiency, and then we need checks and measures in place for when they go wrong. And they need to be, you know, looking at the data you've got first, looking at how you built and tested that data, and then looking at the market and event data, you know, prices, goals in football for the period that perhaps things are going wrong, to see if anything is significantly shifted, because there will be a reason. And there will also be times when you just land on the wrong results, because that happens. It doesn't mean it's wrong, it doesn't mean it's a disaster, and it doesn't mean you're going to land on the wrong results for the rest of your life. Nothing loses forever and nothing wins forever, and I think that's sort of the key to all system development. All of this falls then down into the exact topic we're on, mindset. Have you got the stomach for the game? And unfortunately, not many have. So hopefully you found that those little ones, those last three episodes, useful. And then we'll move it on to, I've got plenty of other things to come, move it on over the next few episodes into things like staking and actual the mechanics of trading and building things out to actually, you know, get some skin in the game.